everyone, and welcome to the Dr. Linda Mental Show. I'm your host, Dr. Linda Mental, the Relationship Doctor, and I'm here every weekend where we are doing life together, and I'm so glad that you have joined me. Chris is off today, but I have a very special guest, Dr. Jim Cribbs, who is a doctor of osteopathic medicine. And if you don't know what that is, just hold on. We'll explain that in just a moment. He's one of my colleagues at the medical school. And Dr. Cribbs, we're so glad you joined us today.
Thank you, Dr. Mental. It's a pleasure to be here.
So you have to describe it in just a moment. But let me tell everybody that you graduated from Michigan State University.
Yes.
I like Michigan State, but I have to say I like University of Michigan a little better. Yeah. But you earned your Doctor of Osteopathic Medicine degree. They have a really, really great program there. He is currently the chair of osteopathic manipulative medicine at Liberty University College of Osteopathic Medicine. He's board certified in neuromuscular skeletal medicine. His practice focus includes osteopathic manipulative medicine. Don't worry, we're going to explain that. Manual sports medicine, non-surgical orthopedics, and interventional pain management. You have to explain first what a doctor of osteopathic medicine is and how that differs from what people might know as an MD versus a DO.
DOs are fully licensed physicians. They manage medicine, perform surgery, and manage a whole host of medical problems just like an MD does. The real difference lies in the way that we approach patients and try to take a holistic view. One of the key aspects, I think, that will really kind of solidify what the difference is that a lot of times a patient will come to you and they'll have a medical problem and you can prescribe medicine for that, or they'll have a surgical problem. But a lot of times a patient will present with neither one of those. And in fact, they have a structural problem. And that's something that DOs are also trained to address. So we perform surgery, provide medication, manage medical problems, but we also address structural problems. So it's a very complete way of looking at treating a patient.
So people always say to me, is that like a chiropractor? And I know that DOs get a little crazy when they hear that. So can you tell people what the difference is between a DO and a chiropractor?
A DO is much more like an MD than a chiropractor in that we go through 4 years of medical school, go through a residency as well. Where there's some similarity is that we do provide manipulation as well. And there's some overlap in the techniques, but it is considerably different. The thing I try to be careful of is I try not to say one is better than the other.
Right.
There are excellent chiropractors, there are excellent MDs, and there are excellent DOs. But our practice focus is a little bit different, and that's what we're discussing a little bit today.
You do a lot more on the musculoskeletal system. That's where your emphasis is, right?
We do. The musculoskeletal system will inform us sometimes of an internal problem. And a lot of times that will reflect back into the muscles or into the soma. So we use our hands to diagnose some problems that might be underlying, and we also use our hands to treat that as well, or at least if it's support the treatment of that.
What you're talking about using your hands, we're talking about osteopathic manipulation. And I remember when I first saw you demonstrate a case.
Yes.
You were using a young adult who was having problems with breathing, asthmatic,
right.
I think.
Yes.
And you were doing some manipulation of the costal cage.
Mm-hmm.
Explain a little bit what you did that would be different than somebody who wasn't a DO.
Really, we looked at the functional problem of asthma. Asthma is inherently an inflammatory disorder and a bronchoconstriction disorder. And the way that we breathe is that our diaphragm below our rib cage descends and our rib cage will expand and contract. And that's also the way that we move lymph within our body and move inflammation. If a patient presents with an asthmatic problem, in addition to prescribing medication to cover that, we'll take a look at how their abdominal diaphragm moves. And if we find that they have restriction in that diaphragm, then we know they're not getting that full complement of air into their lungs, and they're not moving the lymph out of their lungs, which carries the inflammation. And so we'll try to address that as well.
And so you'll do some manipulation with your hands. This is literally a very hands-on approach.
It is.
Right?
It is.
And then the holistic part of it, and the reason I love the DO approach is because as someone who operates in the field of psychology, that is a very important part of the DO approach. They very seriously take the body, the mind, and the spirit.
Yes.
They look at all aspects of a person in what you described as a much more holistic way.
Yes. Usually a person's home life will contribute in some way to their disease process. And not to address that is not taking a complete look at the patient. A lot of times, if you can correct some of the problems at home or some of the issues that they're dealing with in life, then a lot of times they're able to manage their disease process better. And so it's important to take a look at those things.
I hope that gives you just a little bit of an idea what a DO is. We're really interested today in talking about something that you and I are very interested in, the treatment of chronic pain. And I think it's a hot topic right now because it seems like every day when I turn on the radio, I hear one or two stories of somebody who is talking about opioid prescriptions and the overprescription of those drugs. And certainly we all remember the story of Prince, and it came back that on his autopsy that he was overdoing opioid prescriptions. The narcotics are really a problem in American society. Here are some interesting statistics when it comes to using narcotics and opioids for chronic pain. 11%, a little over 11% of U.S. adults say they experience pain every day, every single day. That's a lot of people are saying, I'm walking around with pain.
Right.
And then 1 in 5 non-cancer pain patients receives an opioid prescription from their doctors. And these are typically from their primary care doctors.
Yes.
I just had a tooth implant done. I have a wonderful doctor. But as soon as I was done, they handed me a prescription for Percocet. And I was like, I don't need that. I don't want that. I mean, let me just try some ibuprofen and let me see if I do okay with that and move on. It seems like there's this real willingness to give these medications out without even talking to patients.
What really strikes me about those stats is, first of all, pain is a tremendous problem. It's difficult to get to the root of the cause. Like with your tooth extraction, and a lot of times with acute injuries, most of what's occurring there is an inflammatory process. If you think about spraining your ankle, that ankle will get red, hot, and irritated. And most of that's inflammation, and inflammation causes pain. And so managing an acute process with an anti-inflammatory is really appropriate if the patient can tolerate that. An opioid is good for short term. It's good for when a patient has severe pain, but it is not my first go-to when trying to manage a patient's pain. And I've worked in pain management for close to 10 years now, and I've only managed a handful of patients with opioids because I don't think that that really addresses the underlying problem.
And that's what I love about the approach that you take, is that you're not interested in just treating the symptoms. You're really looking to go to the root of the problem and say, what's causing these symptoms, rather than just treating the symptoms. Medications, a lot of times, just treat symptoms. They don't really cure the problem.
Right.
And so you're looking to get at the root. I think that's an important distinction. The difference is you would say yes to an acute pain, something that happens short term, that is a result of an injury or something that the person does that hurts immediately.
Yeah, something severe. I think you might want to use a combination of an anti-inflammatory with an opioid. If you have something severe, like a broken bone or you just had surgery, but then if you're going to use opioids, then it should really be a short course.
Which is what, 3 days, 4 days, a week, something like that?
Yeah,
months and months and months.
Right,
okay.
Right.
And then chronic pain, the difference between acute and chronic is that chronic pain lasts more than 3 months or so?
Chronic pain develops over about 3 months. And what happens is a person will have an injury or they'll develop pain and it doesn't go away. And what's happening there is there's a conversion in the central nervous system from a peripheral pain to a centralized pain. That's a different process. They need to be addressed differently.
So what we're going to take away from that is for acute pain, this might be appropriate. But when we're talking about chronic pain, which we're going to talk about in the rest of this show, what are the issues involved in chronic pain and what are some of the treatments? What do we need to know? What generates pain? Why is that different? Why do these medications not work? Stay with us. After the break, we'll get into all of that in terms of how to talk about chronic pain, what kinds of approaches work with chronic pain. I'll bet you'll be surprised about the power of the mind and the spirit when it comes to pain. So
yes.
Stay with us. More in a moment. Conflict is a part of every healthy relationship. How you deal with conflict is what will either grow or destroy relationships. Do you avoid? Maybe you become highly emotional and then regret what you said or did. Getting control of our emotions is not always easy, but it is possible. Hi, this is Dr. Linda Mintel, and I wrote the book We Need to Talk in order to help all of us deal better with conflict. We Need to Talk, available at bookstores and online where books are sold. Threats of war, racial tension, divorce, natural disasters. If you are like me, sometimes I just have to turn off the news and remind myself that there is actually good in our world. It's so easy to listen to all the bad news and become worried. Worried about the future, about the Middle East, crime, finances, health, family problems, and, you know, so it goes. But Scripture tells us to take those worried thoughts captive, to be anxious about nothing. That is one of the reasons I wrote Letting Go of Worry. I didn't want worry to grip so many of us and cause us to lose our peace. So the next time you hear bad news, remind yourself to take those anxious thoughts captive. If you need help doing so, letting go of worry is a good resource and will walk you through the steps to living in peace and contentment.
Letting Go of Worry by Dr. Linda Mental, available on her website, drlindamental.com, and online.
Welcome back to the Dr. Linda Mental Show with today's special guest, Dr. Jim Cribbs, who specializes in the treatment of pain, and particularly chronic pain. Dr. Cribbs is a doctor of osteopathic medicine, a DO, who uses osteopathic manipulation in the treatment of his patients. Before, we were talking a little bit about some of the sobering statistics, and we didn't even mention the overdoses that happen with the use of opioids. That's one of the reasons we're talking about this and why it's so serious. How do patients usually present to you, and what generates pain when it's past that acute stage that we talked about and it moves into much more of a chronic pain situation?
Patients will usually present to me in one of three ways. One is the patient may present with acute pain like we talked about, where someone either sprained their ankle or they help someone move over the weekend and they have a lot of inflammation from that. And those are usually transient, and people, if managed correctly, will get better. The second presentation is usually a chronic pain, and we talked about how a patient will experience an injury or they will slowly develop pain. And the third, which isn't really the thrust of what we're talking today, is formative pain, where there's an underlying process. They're having pain, like maybe chest pain or abdominal pain, and it's indicative of something internally, like a heart attack or an appendicitis, where that pain is really a cue for us to look for something more dangerous. Those are really the three types of pain: acute, chronic, or emergent pain.
And that emergent pain, would that include people with cancer or people at the end stages of life, or they're in palliative care and they're using medicine to manage that pain?
Pain is often an indicator that something's wrong. And the most important thing when somebody presents with pain is to identify the pain generator. What is it that's causing pain? For acute and chronic, a lot of times those overlap because one develops into the other. But if somebody has an internal process, you have to listen to why the patient's having pain and look at their whole host of symptoms and make sure that something dangerous isn't occurring.
It seems like a lot of times people will go to the doctor and they don't really know what's causing the pain. They just had it for months and months and months. And I'm sure you as a physician have heard this kind of complaint with people. I don't really know. I haven't done anything. I just know that I'm always having this pain. And this is when people ask for some kind of medication to help them through the process.
The role of the physician in that case is to get a sense for how it started. The best thing a physician can do in that case is to get a good history. Where does the pain, how did it begin? Did it happen after an injury? Is it something that developed slowly? And the more that the physician can understand about the way a patient presents with pain, the better. Another real important aspect to look into is how it's affected their daily lives. Are they functioning differently? Mm-hmm. How much has pain interrupted their daily process? Are they still able to do laundry? Are they able to shower and bathe? Are they able to fix their meals? And that gives us a large idea of how much pain really interrupts their lives. It's important to get a full assessment of what pain level a person has, how often it bothers them, and also how much does it affect their functionality, because it gives you something to track and see if your treatment plan that you're putting in place is really effective or not.
There are a lot of things that affect pain. So talk a little bit about the effect of emotions on pain. If I'm somebody who is reporting pain to you, let's say that I'm in a really difficult divorce or I'm going through some really awful trauma, maybe I witnessed some traumatic event, and I'm having pain. How much impact do our emotions have on pain?
They do have a large impact. It's really interesting. A few years ago in this area, there was a derecho, and it was a major storm, and it knocked out the power for about a week, and it was very destructive to property, and it was kind of one of the more traumatic storms for the region that we've seen in a long time.
This is in Virginia you're talking about.
Yes, this is okay. In Virginia.
Yes.
What was interesting is a lot of patients who had chronic pain, they came in and they'd point back to that situation and say, you know what, my symptoms kind of got worse after that, because I think what happened is that a lot of times pain and emotions follow similar pathways in the brain. And so when something emotional or startling like that happens, it can exacerbate or amplify the pain that a patient has. Another important aspect that a physician has to deal with is how pain can also lead to emotions in a person's health. What pain represents for a person is loss of control. Mm-hmm. They have an injury or pain has developed and they can't control it. And so they find that it interrupts their lives. They're not able to do the things they're used to be able to doing. And they develop depression. Their relationships suffer, or they may not be able to work. And so they feel like there's a major loss of control. And so one of the aspects of treating pain that I think is really key is giving them back control in their lives. So if they can manage their pain, then they might start to be able to manage some of the other areas of their lives a little bit better too.
That's really good, because I know that a lot of times people will say, I'm so afraid of the pain I'm going to feel. So they're anticipating with fear.
Right.
That pain coming back and being a problem. And that amplifies the pain. It turns up the volume. Negative emotions can really turn up the volume on pain
for
people.
Because they feel like there's a loss of control. A lot of times, especially if a patient has pain medicine or opioids, they'll take that pain pill in anticipation of pain.
Mm.
And that's where patients oftentimes become addicted to pain medicine. Because pain is so deleterious to their lives, in a way they feel desperate, they may start to take the medication in prevention of the pain, and it starts a downward spiral for them.
It could also be a sense that I'm taking control of it. I'm having this pain, I'm going to take this medicine, and I'm going to try to make it better. Problem is, it doesn't work.
What happens is that the pain medication fools the brain a little bit, that you're not having pain, but as you start to take it, you develop a tolerance to it, and so it takes more pain medication to cover the same amount of pain. And so really what they're doing is they're losing control, because now they're becoming addicted and there's a loss of control in managing that pain medicine. That's where you see the overdoses, like the tragedy with Prince and others.
What are some non-medication approaches that really work well with pain?
A lot of times there's a structural reason why a person has pain. And so I think it's important to identify that pain generator and find out what structure is causing that pain, and see if altering that structure or blocking that structure, maybe with an anesthetic. One of the nice things I like about it, using an anesthetic injection, you can block it and see if that's where the pain is. For instance, we're talking with Pam, our producer. Pam, do you mind if I talk about this story?
Yes.
She was talking about a pain in her shoulder. We're still trying to identify where the pain is coming from. We could use an anesthetic. We could either inject the bursa beneath the acromion process, and if that blocks the pain and that takes her pain away, then we know, oh, well, it's the bursa. If it doesn't take the pain away, we might consider putting an anesthetic into the acromioclavicular joint. And if that takes the pain away, then we've identified our pain generator, and then we know what structure we need to work on. That's one way that you can use a localized medicine instead of a systemic one to help identify your pain generator. Another thing that you can do is to identify structurally. A lot of times, low back pain or sacroiliac pain develops because there's an asymmetry in the pelvis or in the low back that puts an uneven load on the joints or on the facets in the back. And if you can alleviate the facets in the back, that stress load, it sounds simple, but things that are stuck and restricted, they don't feel good. They're compressed. Yeah. If you get some mobility there, then it does help with the pain. And that's where chiropractic is good. Osteopathic manipulation is excellent there too. You have to identify what is truly causing the pain. If you can get to the root of pain, then you really have an advantage of controlling it.
I love that, because rather than giving somebody a prescription and say, take this because you're in pain, it's really saying, we're going to get to the source. We're going to find out what it is, and we're going to look at that, and it could be something we could manipulate in terms of the structure or the function of what's going on there. And that's where the manipulation part comes in, right?
It does. It's very difficult to treat a structural problem with medicine because you're not addressing the root. If you have a structural problem, you have to address the structure.
I love that, because it also has a spiritual metaphor to it. You have to always address the root, and we're talking about any kind of problem, especially with spiritual problems. So we're going to come back in the last segment, and we're going to link the treatment of chronic pain to some spiritual principles and look at the fact that people in the Bible had chronic pain and the way that that was addressed. Stay with us. We'll be back with Dr. Jim Cribbs, who's a DO and a pain specialist. We'll be back after the break and talk more about dealing with chronic pain. Are you a mom or a dad trying to do your best to raise a healthy weight child in an unhealthy eating culture? Do you often struggle with how to respond when your child asks if she is fat or if he needs to lose weight? Do you wonder, what is normal and how do I best impact my child and his or her eating habits? Well, hi, I'm Dr. Linda Mental, and my book, Raising Healthy Kids in an Unhealthy World, teaches parents how to raise healthy kids in an overscheduled, fast food, video game world by making simple choices, easy changes, and instilling good habits that will improve everyone's life today and forever. Winner of the Mom's Choice Award, Raising Healthy Kids in an Unhealthy World, will give you this confidence, the confidence you need to take charge of your child's eating and raise a healthy weight child.
Raising Healthy Kids in an Unhealthy World. Available on Dr. Linda's website, drlindamental.com, and available online where books are sold.
The other day I was cut off the road by a driver. Everything in me wanted to yell, "Hey, watch out!" but I restrained myself, knowing that yelling at the driver would not do so much good, and it wasn't the best way to deal with my anger. Anger easily rises up in most of us. Anger, while a natural emotion, needs to be dealt with in the right way. The Bible tells us, be angry, but do not sin. So what is the biblical way to handle anger? Well, this is a question I answer in my short and easy book to read, Breaking Free from Anger and Unforgiveness. That small book has sold over 130,000 copies because of how practical and helpful it is to everyday living. So if you want to be angry but not sin, practice what Scripture teaches. Breaking Free from Anger and Unforgiveness is available on my website, drlindamental.com, and online where books are sold. Well, welcome back to the Dr. Linda Mental Show. We're continuing our conversation with Dr. Jim Cribbs, a DO, who is interested in chronic pain and has been working in the area of pain management for a number of years. And Dr. Cribbs, you're not just interested about the physical part of pain, but we also want to bring in the mind and the spirit and how those impact. One of the things that we usually do in our last segment of the program is talk a little bit about the spiritual side of this. I was really taken aback by the number of people in the Bible who suffered with pain. We've got lots of examples. We got Jeremiah, who had incurable pain and was tempted to doubt the character of God during the middle of that, which I know when I had to deal with horrible back pain, I wondered, God, why aren't you helping me here? Why aren't you taking this away from me? And Job, who describes deep bone pain in the book of Job, and Isaiah described pain in the loins, and certainly one that people are familiar with is Paul, who says he has some kind of thorn in his flesh. Now, we could get into a theological discussion of what that is, but obviously something was causing pain. First of all, let's talk a little bit about the people around people in pain. How does that affect relationships?
It can have a large impact on relationships because when a patient starts to succumb to pain, they decompensate in a lot of different areas. And one of the important ways that they do is that where they used to have maybe a vitality for life, it's compromised. And the things that they're usually able to do or they're able to bring to the relationship, they're not able to or just aren't doing at the time. And so the relationship can have some strain on it. I really enjoy when I'm able to see a patient who's in pain and see them with their partner, or their husband or their wife, and I get a sense for the dynamic and how they relate to each other. The important thing I talk about with patients a lot is oftentimes pain is not just in somebody's head. They have a legitimate thing, but the way that they relate to their pain is always in their head. And so they have to be on guard for that loss of control and keep in check with making sure that they're maintaining control in their lives as much as they can. Otherwise, that loss of control will spill over into a relationship. It'll spill over into the job.
And it becomes the focus of everything. And I know that when I went through that horrible back pain and it ended up being a bulge on my L5 in my back, that pain was so intense. And I remember the more I felt it, the more I was focusing on it, which I understand now is the exact opposite of what you want to do.
I'll ask patients, how much time of the day do you think about your pain? How intrusive is it? Because that gives me a measure of how it's affecting a whole host of other things, and not just limited to relationships, but you'll see that too, where that relationship is suffering because so much of their focus is now diverted to their pain. And so one of the things that we try to help people is to adjust their focus.
So the mind has something to do with this in
Certainly.
Terms of distracting yourself from the pain, not letting the pain make you so fearful that you're pulling back from activities, you're not going places, you're not doing things. It's almost like the more attention you give to it, the bigger it grows.
That's true. One of the things that I will encourage patients to do is to look at what's good in their life, to really try to focus on Thanksgiving. To have a gratitude journal that they'll journal in morning and night because that changes their focus. It helps them to focus on what's good. That gives them a measure of control too because they realize, oh, there are some things in my life that are good. And once you get some sense of control, then that can expand.
How important is our spiritual life in terms of thinking about pain? I don't think we have a good theology of suffering in America because we have a hard time when we can't just fix something right away. And these biblical characters who had to struggle with pain and continue to move through their life, is there purpose in pain and suffering? Is it always bad, or do you think there's some kind of purpose in that?
Pain can be redemptive. God is going to answer our prayers in one of two ways. Either he'll deliver us from something, or he'll deliver us through something. But he will do one of those two things. is sometimes difficult is we don't get the choice of what he's going to do with that. And
that's
so
a control issue.
Right. But how that can be redemptive is I have faith that God is either going to deliver me from this or he's going to deliver me through it. Our job is to focus on God, to focus on the good things that he's given us.
Unfortunately, we seem to focus more on God when we're struggling with something, when we're dealing with pain. I like what Charles Spurgeon said, "I am certain that I never did grow in grace one half so much anywhere as I have upon the bed of pain."
Yeah.
I love this other quote. I'll give one more from Elizabeth Elliot, who most of you are very familiar with. She said, "I'm not a theologian or a scholar, but I'm very aware of the fact that pain is necessary to all of us. In my own life, I think I can honestly say that out of the deepest pain has come the strongest conviction of the presence of God and the love of God." It's the oddest thing, Dr. Cribbs, but I woke up from that surgery and I had this closeness with the Lord through that whole process when I was in so much pain. And somehow I could feel almost in a different way than I did when I didn't have the pain that God was there and his presence was with me, even though I wasn't at that moment being delivered out of it.
Right.
I think pain can make us grow. You think of Job, all the suffering that Job did, and what did Job conclude at the end of that whole thing? He said, "I knew about God when I started this process, but through all the pain, I really got to know God."
Right.
And that isn't always easy for us to swallow as Americans. We want to be really careful as we close our time here together to let you know that pain is a consequence of the fall, and it's not necessarily a sign of spiritual weakness or a lack of faith. Pain can actually be a gift to sharpen us at times. Even though Jesus healed, he also suffered many things. So even our Lord and Savior had to suffer. The hope is that the end of pain is heaven. In Revelation 21:4, one of my favorite scriptures is, "And God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away." And when Jesus was speaking to Paul, when Paul was asked about the thorn in his flesh to be removed, he said, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness." And we don't always like to think about weakness. Sometimes that's the way we get the closest to God, is during our times of weakness and suffering.
Yes, that's true.
Well, that's all the time we have today. We could have spoken a lot more on this topic. There's just so much about the whole area of chronic pain. Many thanks to our producer, Pam Miller, who served also as our engineer today, and our post-producer, Chris Underation. Thanks to my special guest, Dr. Jim Cribbs, who made the show a conversation. From all of us here at Faith Radio, we'll talk to you next weekend. In the meantime, remember, we're here, we're doing life together, and it's better when you don't have to do it alone. Well, thanks for listening to this conversation from the Dr. Linda Mintel Show. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and helping us grow the impact of the Dr. Linda Mintel Show. Also, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player, and you'll never miss a show.